From the Lind Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the ninth day of June 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. I'll tell you a bit about the agricultural news for the day, including how E15 has been making its way through parts of the Senate. The House has already passed that kind of bill. The Senate is working hard to figure out how to pass its counterpart and then to get together with the House so that it can be moved on to the president's desk, or maybe not. And we'll also hear more about ethanol as it's related to global shipping. Maersk has successfully used 100% ethanol as a bunker fuel out of the Rotterdam port in Europe. And then we'll turn our attention back to the United States. Abigail Botar, the Ag and Environment reporter here at Illinois Public Media, has been following data centers this spring, and now the regulations the county boards and states are considering. Then as we wrap up our time together, of course, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day. He'll tell us about the hot weather we'll have over the next several days. If you're in parts of the upper Midwest, severe weather may come along with that, and then things will cool down and dry out next week. He'll have all the details on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org. Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin, now joins us for a Tuesday to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Naomi. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about the marketplace for today and what took place, if very much at all. It seems like it was fairly calm. Why do you suppose that was the case?
Well, it feels like the market is trying to make sure that we have some firm footing here for the short term for corn, soybean and wheat prices. You know, we had that huge sell-off over the last 2 weeks. We're back down to the January lows. This should be good support in the short term. We have no weather premium in the market at all anymore. And hopefully we see a little bit of a recovery bounce over the next 2 weeks, heading into the WASDE report, and then also just a recovery bounce from the standpoint of needing to put some weather premium back into the market. But just that one little warning that any kind of a recovery bounce that we get, oftentimes when we head into Father's Day weekend, so June 20th and 21st, sometimes the marketplace has a tendency to sell off lower again after that weekend as we glimpse into the first forecasts for July and weather. So if we see the bounce, make sure you're taking an opportunity for cash sales.
You mentioned the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, or the WASDE report. It is due out at 11 a.m. Central this Thursday morning on the 11th. What kind of expectations for any changes do you have at this point?
Well, I'll be curious to see if there's any adjustments with old crop. You know, the export sales for corn have been so fantastic. There's always the question, though, regarding demand for feed, if that number should come down. So we'll want to see where they have old crop corn carry out. For new crop, I don't think they'll do a lot of adjusting. They usually don't make any big adjustments to yield unless we've had like a dramatic spring like what happened in 2019 when it was so wet. But so I'm not looking for too much adjustments for new crop. Now on soybeans, our export sales have picked up and we are at projections for USDA. And of course, that crush number might continue to be even stronger on the demand side for old crop, maybe even new crop. So I'm kind of hoping we see a little bit of a friendly tone for soybeans on the report on Thursday. And then with wheat, of course, we'll want to see if there's any additional production cuts for the winter wheat, with just as bad as the drought had been out in the southern plains.
On the soybeans, do you suppose that fundamentally there is support under the marketplace at this point? I'm thinking about two things. I read that New Orleans was just 19 cents over the cash price out of South America, Brazil in particular. Could offer an opportunity for China, I would suppose, and maybe we'll see that happen. That's one of the fundamental things I was thinking about. And then crush has been really good, but that is underpinned by the RVO, a policy that is already in place to push along biomass-based fuels like soy diesel and renewable diesel. Is there enough support there for the market to rally on either of those, or at least to find firm footing?
So the big picture answer is that for the November beans, there is tremendous support at $11. Now, we are about 30 cents away from $11, but with the sell-off that we've had so far, we are competitive for exports again to China, as you kind of pointed out. And I really strongly feel that China is going to come in late August and buy American ag products really, really handily and with gusto. So there may be some two-sided trade action here in the short term over the next couple weeks. Any kind of a bounce that we see, though, just like corn, soybean futures do have a tendency to then work a little bit lower after Father's Day weekend. But if we get down to that $11 handle, I feel that that is tremendous support. Regarding the biofuels, so yeah, that would be the question as far as how much adjusting can the USDA or will the USDA do on crush demand, knowing that we still have the hurdle with RVOs to get through as well. But I think there won't be an adjustment lower. It'll just be a matter of what kind of tweaking do they do, if any, to maybe just show that the demand is still there.
So am I hearing you correctly that while there is support, it's lower than where we are? The marketplace sometimes turns lower, particularly if we don't have a weather premium going through the summer months here in the United States right through August. So it depends on, you know, from what point does it bounce higher, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So right now, the November beans have been swirling around the 100-day moving average near the 1140 area. If by chance that can't hold as a support area, prices could slide lower to the 200-day moving average, which is 1115. But of course, the question is, what kind of trade action do we see on any kind of a recovery bounce as we get to those support levels? And ultimately, $11 on this November 2026 contract, tremendous uptrend support line, which has been established essentially since November of 2024. So it's a big deal. It's a good support area. I think that that'll hold until we know for sure where our acres numbers are going to be and what the August weather will be. So I'm you know, kind of a little bit of a realist here in the short term that prices may have a little recovery bounce, but with the funds exiting the long positions in the amount that they have, they're in the seasonal sell-off mode, and they're kind of saying to the market, hey, the weather has to prove otherwise, that the crop is not good. Otherwise, prices could just continue to grind lower until mid to late August, when for the past 2 years, we have found a very, very significant harvest low. So in summary, you know, take advantage of any short-term recovery bounces that we might see over the next 2 weeks, and be sure to be making some additional cash sales.
What are the technical chart points for corn?
So on the December corn futures, what I'm watching there, we're back down to the January low, which pretty much was the low from last August also for this December 2026 contract. A recovery bounce, I think 470 is very likely, and at best, maybe the 475 area, because there is a pretty strong downtrend line that comes into 475 price point area, and then the 100-day moving average is now also going to be resistance in conjunction with that downtrend line. So somewhere between 470, 475, I think, would be the recovery bounce, and then make sure you get those cash sales made. And here's where I'm going to be the Debbie Downer, and I hate to say it, but the last 2 years when December corn futures finally found their low, it was at or slightly below the $4 price point in mid to late August. So if we can get that bounce, make sure you're taking advantage of it.
Thank you much. We appreciate it, Naomi. That's Naomi Bloom, of course. She is at TotalFarmMarketing.com. In today's agricultural news, the Senate Majority Leader says a new E15 bill is in the works. Senators are working on a bill to allow year-round sale of E15 as a higher ethanol blend, says Senate Majority Leader John Thune. The Senate Agriculture Committee does not expect to include the E15 provision in its farm bill legislation. However, the South Dakota Republican says meetings on the issue are underway. The Senate is working to take up the issues after the House narrowly passed a standalone E15 measure last month, 218 to 203. Its E15 bill would revamp parts of the federal renewable fuel standard, specifically the House of Representatives version, would shrink the number of biofuel blending exemptions for small oil refineries. This is commonly called an SRE for small refinery exemption. Now let's stay with ethanol for a moment. Maersk Container Ship has successfully operated on 100% ethanol during bunker fuel trials. Unlike earlier tests, the latest bunkering operation took place in Rotterdam in early June on a larger scale with fuel delivered by a barge. So assessment of operational procedures, supply chain readiness, and fuel handling were conducted under realistic conditions. The Laura Maersk vessel has already been central to a series of alternative fuel trials. Last fall, it tested a new fuel blend consisting of e-methanol mixed with 10% ethanol. That followed by a further onboard trial in December using 50-50 ethanol and methanol. Ethanol, of course, is one of several potential fuels being explored as part of a broader effort to diversify the company's low-emissions fuel portfolio. On that note, let's stay with fuels. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve, or SPR, is on track this week to fall to its lowest level since it was being filled for the first time in the 1980s. This as the Trump administration continues its emergency drawdown to mitigate the loss of the Strait of Hormuz crude. As of late Friday, there were about 350 million barrels in the SPR, of which the U.S. government has plans to release 172 million barrels. Later this year, then, the strategic reserve would drop down to just 243 million barrels. And finally today, a Wisconsin farm has sold for a really large dollar figure. A recent farmland auction in south-central Wisconsin demonstrated the continued strength of high-quality agricultural land values, with a 208-acre tract selling for nearly $22,000 per acre. The property, located about 15 miles south of Madison, sold in five tracts for a combined $4.55 million during an auction held in late April. About 50 bidders registered for the sale, including local farmers, investors, and potential rural home site buyers. A local dairy farmer ultimately purchased all five tracts. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, summer has arrived, and that means it's time for agronomy days across the state of Illinois. The U of I will kick off its season Thursday of this week on June the 11th at the Rader Family Farms in McLean County. You can visit there for an overview of their agritourism operation. Take a look at the precision-planted corn maize they have and how they do school tours, special events, and sponsorships. You can check it all out at the Rader Family Farms. They'll talk about sunflowers and zinnias and mums, apples, pumpkins, and so much more. The featured speakers will include Muhammad Babadoust and Casey Athey from the U of I, along with James Santiago. And then on Wednesday, June 24th, that's a couple of weeks away, the Weed Science Program at the U of I invites everybody who's interested in weed management to come to campus to the Klim Farm. That's located on South First Street at 8 a.m. for the Weed Science Tour. Again, you can find more information in the calendar at willag.org. Those are just a couple of the items that are coming up in the month of June. There'll be agronomy days at the Orr Center in Western Illinois on July 15th in July, and Monmouth on the 22nd, and then Ewing on July the 23rd. All the details of those programs are online. You can search Agronomy Day and Crop Sciences at the University of Illinois, or just look in the calendar at willag.org. As you know, if you've been listening to our programs, the development of large-scale data centers is booming, particularly here in the Midwest. Now, analysis from the Pew Research Center finds the number of data centers in Illinois, well, it's set to double. But water and energy usage are rallying some communities against the data centers. As IPM's Abigail Botar reports, local and state governments are rushing to regulate this growing industry.
More than 100 people packed into tight chambers for an Illinois County board meeting in April.
I'm going to call this meeting of the Champaign County Board to order.
They're here to support pressing pause on development of large-scale data centers, a move many communities have made in recent months. Dozens of people voiced concerns about the massive amounts of water and energy data centers use, including sixth grader Samuel Tamori.
We don't need the AI as we need our water.
The board unanimously passed the one-year moratorium. These debates surrounding data centers are playing out in communities across the Midwest and Great Plains. Concerns from environmental impacts to noise are spurring efforts to block the new development. In Missouri, one St. Louis suburb even voted out half of its city council after it approved a $6 billion data center deal. Newly elected Festus Councilmember Rick Belleville says he decided to run for office to bring more transparency to the project.
When somebody comes to town and says, hey, we're going to give you millions of dollars and we're going to build a data center, they need to slow down and get a full understanding of how the whole thing's going to affect their community.
Now he's working to put limits on water use for any new industry, including data centers, that want to come to Festus. It's not just local governments. State lawmakers are also pondering how to regulate data centers. Legislators in more than 20 states, including Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, Minnesota, and Oklahoma, introduced bills this year to add guardrails to data center development.
I think people are trying to catch up.
That's Dave Owen, a law professor at the University of California, San Francisco, who studies the energy impacts of data centers. He says this flurry of legislation stems from the outrage many communities feel when data center developers try to build in their backyard.
I don't think really anybody foresaw how much of a popular backlash there would be against data centers. So even, you know, a year and a half ago, a lot of state and local governments were very eagerly trying to court data centers.
Analysis from the National Conference of State Legislatures found as of May, 38 states currently offered dedicated incentives meant to attract data centers. But several states are reconsidering. Illinois is one of them. Governor J.B. Pritzker praised the passage of tax incentives in 2019, but at his State of the State speech this year, he sang a different tune.
In the face of rising demand and surging prices, I'm proposing a two-year pause on authorization of new data center tax credits.
After the Illinois legislature failed to act, Pritzker announced he's implementing a tax incentive pause starting July 1st. Several other states, including Michigan, are considering a full repeal of their data center incentives, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. Michigan's tax incentives for data centers went into effect just last year. State Representative Dylan Wigella, a Democrat, is sponsoring legislation to repeal them. And it's co-sponsored by a Republican.
As people especially have started to see the bipartisan local pushback, a lot of legislators have changed their mind on this.
But Michigan's governor still supports data centers. That's one reason Wigella doesn't think his bills will pass. But he hopes communities will take up the effort and pass their own restrictions. That's a heavy weight for individual communities to bear, according to Jonathan Coppice. He's the director of the Gardner Agriculture Policy Program at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.
This isn't fair to put on a county board.
He says the federal government should step in.
But I do think it's a really difficult thing even for states. Water flows, electricity flows across state lines.
Federal legislation to pause data center development has been introduced, but the bill, sponsored by minority party members, is unlikely to pass in a Republican-controlled Congress. That means for now, these decisions about water, energy, and large-scale development will continue to be a patchwork of local and state laws. I'm Abigail Botar, IPM News.
Abigail Botar is the Ag and Environment reporter for Illinois Public Media. You may find more from her, including this story, at ipmnewsroom.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. Find us online at willag.org. That's .org. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Let's turn our attention to the agricultural weather forecast. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hello, Don. Thanks much for being with us. We have been following parts of the world near you. I think this may have an impact in your area as well. But the Northern Plains, the Canadian Prairies particularly, a long ways between those two. But those Northern Plains had been dry for some of the canola and soybean in those areas. Can you talk to me about that and then kind of work your way to the southeast through the Corn Belt?
Well, it is looking like those areas that you just mentioned, dry, have been getting some help here over the last couple of days, and we'll be getting some more with some shower and thunderstorm activity. Now, unfortunately, some of it's going to be severe. We're going to have a severe weather day today and tomorrow in the Dakotas and a good part of the upper Midwest, and some of this is going to get into the northern and northwest Corn Belt. So we're going to see that. So there is some hope for some precipitation. And then behind that is a cooler, drier air mass that will settle in, only to be followed by another cooler air mass coming next week. In fact, if you look at the 7 to 10 day pattern, a lot of the Midwest, a lot of the central United States is going to see below average temperatures.
Those are coming next week, but it's going to be hot, and we still have thunderstorms. I assume those are of the pop-up variety at this point in the afternoon. They feel like a midsummer thunderstorms as much as anything else, but you tell me what's behind this situation.
Well, due to the fact that this cool front is fairly robust, there is going to be a fair amount of severe weather. And so for the next 3 days, especially in the upper Midwest, then getting into the northern Corn Belt, then getting into the Great Lakes, there will be some of these thunderstorms that are going to get a bit stronger, a little bit more than the garden variety we've seen here lately.
And where will they primarily be located? You talked about the northwestern part of the Corn Belt. Do they drift further south than that?
Yeah, a little bit. So it's going to be biased to the north. So we're talking Minnesota, Wisconsin, the eastern side of the Dakotas, eastern Nebraska, Iowa, then into a good part of the northern and western parts of Illinois and northern Missouri. Then we're going to see kind of a trend more northeastward into the Great Lakes region with the severe weather on the tail end of this.
And then comes the cooler weather, drier weather. How long do we sustain it, do you suppose?
Well, for a few days. And then what's going to happen is we're going to have a reloading of some cool air. In fact, we're going to see a fairly robust Hudson Bay low form as we get into the end of the weekend and early next week. And that's going to pump the counterclockwise rotation of the air around that. It's going to bring cool air out of south central Canada, and that's going to settle into the northern plains and into the upper Midwest. Now, initially, it'll be cooler, drier air, but as it goes further south, it will encounter some higher humidity air, and we'll see showers and thunderstorms pick up in parts of the Delta region and the southern plains.
Okay. Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.